greetings, fellow travelers, and welcome to The Way of the Showman, where we view the world through the lens of showmanship. I am Captain Frodo, and I will be your host and guide along the way. And for those of you who are ardent listeners, checking out the episodes every 2 weeks, or jumping into your car to drive to a far-off gig and listen to the last 5 episodes, you will know that we are on a big journey here in what's called season 4. For those of you who managed to have season numbers on your podcast downloader, you know that we're in season 4 and that we're exploring showmanship and play. But today we're not going to go do another leg of that journey. We're going to sit down around the fire. And as has happened a couple of times before, at episode 21, where we looked at the showman and as the captain of the showmanship, and episode 42, which was about the universe, the showman and the universe, and it's like basically like a creation story. So in episode 21, episode 42, there was 21 between those, and then there hasn't been an episode like that since then. So now we're coming to episode 100. But I did do an episode, I can't remember which number that is, but that was the Day We Murdered Mystery, which is a short little story about a guild of showmen and an attraction that a journalist saw on a peculiar little midway somewhere. Those three are, if anything, little glimpses into what's going on in my mind of how I, if showmanship really is as deep as what I am, as what I find it to be, then I do think that if there is a secret society of show folk out there who takes showmanship as important and take it as foundational as what I do, and there is, then there would be stories, there would be songs, like in episode 21, I believe there is a little song there that I sing. So I'm, as well as doing all of this prose, all these ideas about what showmanship is and can be, there is fiction as well, or stories. And as we have mentioned a few times on this exploration of showmanship and play, it's clear that stories is all that we have. So, for now, enough talking around the porridge, as we say. Let's jump into the butter eye. As Norwegians put butter in the middle of their porridge. And let's jump into the butter eye, gather around a fire, and listen. Let me tell you a story. It goes in rhyme. It grows around you, and you will get to hear soundscapes that comes that shall let your imagination carry you away. Or if not carry you away, carry you deeper into the reality of this story. It spans oceans, it spans continents, and it gets very, very dark at times, but there is still light in the end. So, with that as a promise, carve yourself out a half hour of time in your day to listen to this in one go, if you can, so that you get the impact of the whole thing. It only takes half an hour. It's all in rhyme, and it's all for you. So, when you listen to it, try to listen to it in the way that we've already spoken about here. Listen to it as a metaphor. Listen to the story as if it was written by me, told by me, specifically to you, only you. In the faraway land of Hayastan, unfamiliar to the unschooled man, beneath the mountain that once was the porth for Noah's Ark, there was a man that made a life as a clown in a circus park. But there is no laughs in his caravan. Life is hard for this poor man,
awaiting death to take his wife, one of two loves in his life. His other love, his little girl, became motherless in this world. Filled with grief, the clown, he saw his wife wasting away. But knowing that there had to be meaning in all dismay, the horrid symptoms of consumption, Wasgard's will was his assumption. But he also took it as a sign that it was time for change. He thought that it would be best to board a boat to some exchange. But his country had no shores. He had to journey to the ship. He packed his case and prepared his daughter for the trip. He couldn't wander west through Anatolia, for there they slew his countrymen. He would go through Georgia. He traveled long and he traveled far out to the dark black sea. He boarded a vessel that would sail to the new world filled with glee. They sailed through the Bosporus Strait, where he taught his girl how to fasten bait. And they stopped a day on the Isle of Malta, then journeyed on past the Rock of Gibraltar. They sailed far out to the open sea, and no land had been in sight, when a livid storm hit their ship in the dead of night. The wind is roaring and the sails they crack, as the ship is going down. He protects his girl from the waves' attack, shouting, "I will not let you drown." But the sea is strong, and its liquid arms, they are so full of force, and the drowning clown is willful but weak. You can never keep back anything that the ocean wants, of course, but the father refuses to give up, though life is bleak. And just a precious few little seconds tickers by, where they can draw their breath again and pray that they won't die. The tired father treads the sea and tries to hold her high. He tells her it will all be good, but he knows it is a lie. His legs, they burn in the icy sea, the painful fear and agony tears at the poor clown's soul. He's clinging to his faith of old, "Please save me, Lord above, take me please, and let her live, my only little love." But nothing changed. The sea it raged and the merrier would swim. With anger growing, his heart was caged. Why would God tear his child from him and take this innocent life at whim? He knew that the Almighty's plan was inscrutable to man. There was no way a mortal could even begin to understand. But he knew his own girl's heart was pure. She was a beaming innocent. "Please, my lord, don't drown her dead. I promise I'll repent. I'll stop this silly life of mine, the constant sheer frivolity. Please, God, I beg you, lord, let her escape mortality." So many of your churchmen said that only sin and devil's work would circus and laughs is spread. I thought them wrong. I couldn't see that you were only testing me to not trust my own head. A little child, so young and weak, how could you in your wisdom seek such havoc for the meek? He needs a rest so desperately, but the storm is blowing ceaselessly. With a girl's arm around his neck like an anchor from a ship, she shouted in his dripping ear with diction like a whip, "Please, strong father, hold me fast. I cannot even see the mast. How can we sail to the new world without even a boat?" He smiled to calm his little girl whilst struggling to float. With his last remaining strength, he took his necklace off his head. It had always kept him safe and promised hope ahead. Now he wanted her to have all his hope instead. It sparkled as the lightning flashed and shortly lit the dark. It was a golden recreation of Noah's Ark. And how it hurt his soul to see this symbol of a boat that saved each living thing by keeping them afloat. He prayed again to his Lord God, "Please send an ark for me. I cannot hold her anymore. Please end this misery." But nothing came, and the storm it blew and blew and pounded on. His legs felt lame as he knew that the sea had won. As the father cried his tears of blood and trembled with fatigue, the ocean waves came crashing in to finally end the siege. It grabbed them both and tore, and tore and tore apart. No stronger love was fought unbound in ocean or on solid ground. So finally the moment came when he no longer could hold on. As she slipped out of his grip, he saw her as a swan. The clown, he wasn't strong enough to hold this little girl. Struggling in her flowing white dress, she drifted off. As his fingers lost their grip, he thought he heard her cough. But in his mind, his signet love swam on to a better place. It broke his heart to look upon her little drowning face. God had deemed it time, he thought, all his strife had come to naught. The hope that now was left for him, it was rather grim. He wished to go to God as well, so he didn't swim. To his surprise, he woke alive in a narrow berth, and it felt like someone stabbed his heart and he knew he had no worth. As in a flash it came to him, his girl had left this earth. And he was still around to hurt, he'd rather be under 6 feet dirt. There sat a sailor by his side, he had fallen deep asleep. The clown he turned against a wall to weep and weep and weep. The sailors could not console the clown, and the captain thought as he set a course, perhaps we should have let him drown. They could hardly make him eat or speak, all were wondering about his nose. When they fished him from the ocean blue, he was wearing but a shirt, and in the pocket on the breast they found a round red nose, and the men proposed in jest that the man he was a clown, but when they asked a crying man, he would only frown. The ship it docked at a tiny pier outside a tiny town, as they all disembarked the boat, in this port so damn remote, they waved as the mariner walked off, dressed only in a gown. He had no place to be or go, but wandering he did. It somehow felt a little better, like his mind would rid itself of pain and be relieved. The walking would be good for him, that was what he believed. But he was almost naked and a stranger in this land, so far away from home, he would need some clothes and shoes if he was to roam. In a corn crop by the little port, he saw a scarecrow standing, waving in the gentle wind with night-dark ravens landing on his outstretched arms in a field between two farms. A scarecrow not repulsing birds is absolutely obsolete. With easy heart, the merrier could the scarecrow's clothes deplete. A stranger in a strange new land, he hoped that he would drown in all the tears that fell from the broken-hearted clown. There was no joy in his heart no more. Without the daughter he adored, he only wished to be ignored. But somewhere deep inside there were a spark that would deter the harrowed soul from finding death. It stopped him seeking his last breath. Even with a broken heart, a man must eat and drink. Were it so hard to make folks laugh when of only misery you think? But soon his belly rumbled even louder than his heart, and he knew that time had come for his displays of mirth to start. In the scarecrow's suit, he did decide to present his act on the seaport square. From the look of all the sour-faced men, a show like this is rare round here. He finds a spot he thinks will work and wipes away a little tear. He begins his old routines from home but finds the acts fall flat. As he does his best to make them laugh, they all shun him like a rat. Moments meant for laughter would be ominously silent. Other moments meant for joy on the brink of being violent. By the culmination of his act, the audience had left. The ancient, lonely merrier was quite alone, in fact. To stop his hunger, he stole a bread and ate it in the graveyard surrounded by the dead. And so it went for many months. The clown became a thief. To avoid the law, his stays in towns, they all became quite brief. On feet or in a railroad cart, always further south, tormented by his drowning girl, consumed by Neptune's mouth. The dust that blew right through him as he walked the windswept land. Not enough of food to eat, neither fresh nor canned. Once almost killed in his sleep by a cotton mouth, on his long and lonesome way, 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 way down south. Then one day, as the clown wandered into town, there was a circus in the square, a tiny little horse-drawn show with a strong man and a bear. The ancient merrier walks up like he belongs. He tells the men inside the tent that he is a clown and knows many comic songs. The strong man laughs and tells him straight up to his face, "You, a clown? I doubt that's true. You look like a disgrace." The merrier, he won't give up. He wants so bad to be on show, on a stage, in their big top. But they won't have him on as a funny man. They don't believe that he can make crowds laugh until they weep. Instead, they see the old poor man as a homeless creep. But finally, he gets a job as a low-paid geek. He gets his board and $2 per week. So the clown that lost his luck makes a living eating snakes. He finds that he doesn't mind if he imagines they are steaks. They travel in the horse-drawn carts from town to town, but every village is just as bad, there just ain't no cash around. The shows are empty, but the fairground full of people looking in, and the children look so awfully thin. Trying to get a man to gamble a game he cannot win is a crime as dark as sin. When people starve, then no one wants to see the wild man eat a snake. With enough days without a bite, you have such a bellyache that seeing a man sitting in a pit biting the head right off a snake does not repulse a bit. Then after many weeks of this, they arrive into a town. Every river has run dry with deep cracks in the ground. There has been no rain for months or even years, and the sound of crying, thirsty babes fill their dusty ears. The morning, as the show should start, the promoter called them round. He was famous for his armored heart. He told them their world it was falling apart. The fat promoter climbed on top, the wagon filled with poles. He raised his hands and cleared his throat to the parched cries of a dancing goat. "There is no money in this town, neither here nor there. All the water has turned brown. We are miles from anywhere." His eyebrows furrowed as he said, "We are sorry to have to tell you this, but the carnival is dead." He took his hat so solemnly off his sweaty head and placed it right before his heart as an example for the crew, but with a face a tad too smug, so the strong man yelled, "Screw you!" But there was no doubt in any mind that the fairground did unwind, and the carnival disbanded when the management ran off. There was many hefty quarrels and plenty fight and scuff before they all went separately out in the world all free. He's stranded now without a job in a one-horse town. He takes a stroll to look around. We know too well that our poor clown was already feeling down. So he sets his course for the only bar to swamp his feelings with a drink, anything to stop him think. But as he nears the door, he hears sweet sounds from a guitar. He's never heard such sounds before. It grabs his hurting heart and tore and tore and tore, but not apart, rather piercing like a dart. Picking strings while he sings, it sounds as sweet as art, like the very hand of God had sprouted from a man, for only the divine it can turn the soul straight into sound. As coarse and harsh and primitive as from this colored fellow that sits in the darkened corner looking rather mellow, while strumming, picking, plucking the soul from his guitar. The guitarist was hardly old enough to be called a man. He is but a boy. How can it be? I need to know how it began. How can there be enough inside of him, of life both sweet and grim, heaven and earth and all between, from the time before the very day when God himself would say, "Let there be time and space and life and death and all between, and all the way until it ends in eternity"? How can this young man so easily convey all this just through his play? When the music stops, the merrier goes over with a drink. "Those sounds, they sure are sweet, my friend. It kind of makes me think. I've never heard the like before. and the lacerations through my soul, that loss of love from life it tore, your music seems to mend. I'm glad it makes you feel like this, for the price to play so sweet a tune was my soul to the abyss on Beelzebub's harpoon. Satan showed me how to croon and play his old guitar, and promised me I'd be a star, but in return I had to give the evil one control of my immortal soul. The merrier he drank his drink and gave it all a good old think, I'll ask the devil to make of me the funniest man on earth, make my mother the only one to ever have given birth to such a man of mirth. I see no further down from here, so tell me if you can, where can I meet this devil man? I'd like him to make it so each time I do a show. I'm always met with laughter and never met with frowns. I want him to make of me the ultimate king of clowns. You're sure you know that's what you want? That it's not because you're starved and gaunt that you'll sign away the precious thing, your own immortal soul, just to become a king? Oh, I don't care about my look, or my empty gut or smell. I have hurt way too much to care, I now want to excel. But in his heart he hoped to find a way to keep Beelzebub at bay. Well, then I'll tell you all you need to know. You have to get a crucifix, one that's made of birch. I know there is just such a cross you can steal from that little church. Then you go to the crossroad on the other side of town, just past the hallowed ground where the gallows tree stands black and dead. You have to remember what I said, nothing will work instead. Then place your hands around the cross so it is upside down. You got to stick it in the ground so the Lord's whole head is in. If you put it right way round, you see your luck'll be running thin. You must be sure his head is buried, buried in the dirt. This is a fact I must assert, the Lord must be made inert. His ears must be covered so he can't hear, and his eyes must be blind so he can't see. Then you'll have to spit and you'll have to swear and carve the skull of a dead man's bones into the bark of a tree. Then you got to be waitin', because the devil don't come right away. When he comes, you got to pray that you know just what to say, for the devil won't be waitin' for you to make up your mind. If you meet him with your mind unmade, the devil don't care to be kind. The clown gets a wooden cross and plants it upside down. In the center of the crossing roads, the call to hell is sown. The Armenian merrier stood waiting in the sun. He put his clown nose on, and transformation had begun. The fool inside crept out from sleep, funny enough to make a grown man weep. But the hours came and went away, and it is hard to clown around all day. He reached into his jacket lining and fished out a flask of rum. It didn't even touch his mind that to drink might just be dumb. Don't dance with the devil drunk, they say. You just won't get your way. He'll say he'll fix your every need as long as he gets to lead. Shuffling round in the wilted grass, he spotted a thing that shone like brass. In the yellow straw by the dusty road, a little lantern gone astray had become a castle for a toad, and he fell on his face to pray. Then he shook the cane-toed king off his throne where he tried to cling. To find a little light to illuminate the dark was just what he did need. If the devil came to him long after the sun went down, he was sure that the simple clown would in the darkness drown. Unless there was a way he could create a little spark and with it plant a burning seed, for it is best to see your steps if the devil's in the lead. Waiting for Satan like a child for Santa, the hours ticks past with lead-footed pace, and soon the scarecrow-suited clown sat staring into space, and far away he sees some sheep, and before long he falls asleep. He wakes up to the sound of steps coming up the road. His heart it hammers, his breath is short, and long gone is his toad. There is no fire in his lantern, but he holds it nonetheless. He checks his clown red nose is straight, that the crucifixes desecrate, he is ready to transgress. The sound of steps from hobnail boots on the feet of a hobo man. The times must
really be hard when the devil walks the land. Are you the one they call Beelzebub that comes out from the dark? The hobo laughed and said he was, called by many names you could shout at any dog that bark. Well then, devil, I will ask you this. Can you make me the king of fools? The funniest of every man that don't have to follow rules? The hobo just was quiet now. They felt the cold wind blow. The hobo's eyes were staring at the red nose of a clown. You don't look like you're bound by rules and regulations. You look like you should perform at celebrations. That is just what I want. I want to be the best. The one that is so uproarious that he's different from the rest. Well, I reckon if you think that's you, that's just what you should do. Well, if you'll do me this, I'll give you my immortal soul. I assume that's what you want. The hobo looked bewildered now and stood there like a cow. I thought you asked me just in jest to get something particular off your chest, but actually you think I am the evil king of pest. I tell you, clown, I am not different from the rest. My advice to you is this: if you harbor such desires, if you have any wish to actually be a king or any kind of fool, I believe just as a rule you have to do it for yourself.
There will be no help from Lucifer or the Almighty God on heaven's shelf.
If your desire lies in art, just listen to your heart. If deep in there all you want is to be an idiot savant, that feel-good folks would laugh and joy bring happiness to each girl and boy, you have to listen to yourself, with your heart as a compass on your way. You can never go astray. With this the hobo walked away, down the dusty road with no delay, and left the merrier alone to kick the dust and groan. He hadn't dared to look inside. He knew that he would find a hole so deep and black and dark it would eat him like a shark. With this inside, it wasn't strange that people didn't laugh.
The sorrow grown from losing her wrecked his faith in all mankind.
It tore his heart, soul, and mind until his art was so confined it spoke to none, not even him. So long now my only want was for her to come back. This has been my nightly plea, my grieving mind's only track. Why did you take her from me, Lord? Why did you not take me? How many nights have been spent like these, with grief devouring me like a disease, my heart refusing to let it go.
The image of her drowned below.
If I am to stay around on this wretched earth, I have to make my life have worth. I must release her from my heart and mind, to let what's happened be behind, and let my soul appease. The merrier stood abruptly up and grabbed the crucifix. I'm hanging up this call to hell. I no longer have a wish to sell my very soul for tricks. Then in the dark he takes the cross and digs a little grave. To come to terms with his loss and her that he still crave, he decides to bury the only thing that he still has from home. He drops the old red clowny nose into the little grave. He covered it with some moss, then threw away the cross. He wandered on as if born anew, ruminating on what was true, what was truly part of him and of his desires, and does he still have what his work requires? As the road slowly, slowly eats his shoe, he sees some paper blowing through. His heart it pounds as he sees it is some circus flyers. And in that instant the clown he knew, the kind of minds that one finds inside the likes of him, were meant to be suppliers of laughs, thrills, and frivolity to ticket buyers. And there it was so splendidly, standing in a field, its trains and wagons all around, a menagerie and a grand big top so lavishly revealed. It was the greatest show on earth, here the merrier could show his worth, this was his perfect chance. So happy was our little clown, he'd dance a little dance. It was the great big circus charity matinee, he heard the proud ringmaster say, "Are all the kids from the orphanage here?" There was a great big cheer. How about the kids from the hospital? The response, not quite as capital, some kids too weak and others broken, but their smiles was their tokens. They never could have loved it more. It made their spirits roar. This is it. This is the day. Now can come whatever may. No more masks. The nose is gone. Now it is just me. What would I want fame and fortune? I was stupid not to see. What is done comes not undone. I am doing this for them. All those that are just like my little love. He sneaks inside the grand big top. He now looks like a hobo. There is no tent boss to tell him stop. And as he enters, his luck of luck it is. The clown brigade is on its way to stop a fire's fizz. Stupid-looking firemen in baggy pants and suits, other grotesquely smiling clowns in giant boots, are stomping on a fire. They all fall and run around and a merrier stand still, with attention and a zeist for life, all his dreams so soon fulfilled. Suddenly they notice him, the hobo is a bum. The clown commander comes over, but the merrier plays dumb. When he points towards the door, the merrier points at the floor. Now the crowd has noticed him. He goes out on a limb. When the clown commander grabs his arm, he reacted as to harm. He fell to the ground in a most surprising manner and rolled and squirmed just like a snake towards the circus banner. The children laughed at the funny man. Then, before you could even blink an eye, as fast as a man can, he pushed the clown commander and waved goodbye. Now all the clowns got angry. Who is this guy that steals all the laughs and joy, that makes all the gags we can employ seems tiresome and old? Let's get the freeloader out of here. When we get our funny hands on him, he won't be so bold.
The hunt that then ensued in words cannot be told.
But as they did the best they could to grab the clumsy man, he fell or dropped or spun around or got his tie stuck in a fan. Miraculously saving him from the fury of the clowns, making them chasing him even harder up and downs. The ringmaster was heard to shout, "Who is this guy? I want him out. He is ruining the show." But as the mighty swarm of clowns are closing in on him, his chances, they look slim. He runs inside the center ring where the tiger cage is set. He runs inside and quickly stops, kicking sawdust and some bottle tops. All the clowns are in there too, with sinister-looking props. But just before they jumped on him, he pulls the most surprising stunt and jumps out through the safety gap so tight it makes him grunt. Then he snaps the lockdown shut. Inside, the clowns are piling up, and the merrier he runs a perfect strut and slams the tiger cage shut. Then he stands alone, the only man in the ring. For a moment there, he thinks he hears the angels sing. He's the only one not inside a cage. The clowns now look like lions in their rage. The thunderous applause and the loud appreciation, so powerful that it shook the entire nation. The ringmaster says, "Who is this guy? I need to know. I want him in the show." Everyone inside the tent, there was more than 10,000, that came from far beyond town's end, stood up, which was unheard of for a clown. "I have never witnessed this, and I have been around," said the stirred ringmaster as he was breathing ever faster.
"He doesn't wear a painted face, no red nose sits in place. It is just a man."
The applause was so wild, it was drowning out the band. All the crowd is clapping, except one little girl. Wearily, the girl stands up and strokes away a little curl. Eyes locked at the hobo, she walked out in the ring. For the first in the longest time, the merrier is happy. Forgotten is the strife and grime. He's feeling rather sappy. Then he sees the little girl, her long blonde hair. Like an angel, she is so fair. She looks just like his little girl, so beautiful she cannot be of this world. The crowd's noise, so loud it makes him dizzy. His little brain, just too busy. It cannot be. Why was I not free? Why come this apparition now to me? His heart is pounding in his chest, almost bursting from his breast. Now I am possessed. He holds on to his breaking heart. This is it. She has come to take me home. My heart has broken. Thank you, Lord, for letting me make them laugh again. Smiles abound, so nice to see. Just one more time before I died. He holds his arms out to the side, towards his angel girl.
Now let us fly. Take us home, up through the circus dome. Let eternity unfurl. If my mind is playing tricks on me, if this all is a dream, then, God, let me please just sleep and sleep and sleep.
His eyes are now so filled with tears, he cannot see her face. The girl holds out her hands out into empty space, and the crowd quiets down a bit. Some in the front now sit. The tears make him strain his eyes, makes the spotlight shine like stars. And then he sees the necklace on her pale, frail neck so slight, it fills him as fast as fright, a picture of that night. The necklace that he knows so well, it is a ship, the very recreation, the very Noah's Ark that he gave her before the swell ate her like a shark. Now she comes on over, and she says his name, and after that, he never was the same. The old man buckles and falls down to his knees. She puts her arms around her dad.
Please now, father, don't be sad. You promised me it won't be bad, and now I know it's true. I have so much to tell to you. I clung so long to the broken mast, but please now, father, hold me fast, and never let me go. They said that you would never come, but I always told them no.
The father cried and cried and cried. He couldn't make it stop, no matter how hard he tried. He flung his arms around his girl.
My precious little pearl, the miracle of miracles just came through for me. Standing real before me now, it is really you. It really is my gorgeous dove, my only little love.
It got dark, but it built itself back up again and ended up with the sweetest ending one could possibly have imagined, I think. At least it was the most sweet ending that I could imagine. So I'm going to leave that there. I recorded that in 2009 in Soho Square in London when I was doing our first stonking season at the Hippodrome. Before it became a casino in Leicester Square, and it really was the season that put La Clique, as we were called at that time, on the map. And I had been writing this epic poem. I was first struck then by how Calliope is both a steam organ that's played along the midway, but it is also, Calliope is also the Greek muse for epic poetry. So I thought that there was some sort of link here between this being about the heart and soul of the carnival, as shown through one man and his struggle to organize his family. And this is also this years before I became a father myself, so it's purely imaginative, not based on true story, but it is based on imagination. And it's a reciprocal relationship between me and also the words, as the rhyming is driving me into all sorts of different parts of the story that I might not have gotten to. And how I chose the different things, who knows? And did I know that it was going to end like this? No. I started writing and I didn't know where it was going to go. And I wrote the different sections at different times. And then whilst travelling in Spain with my wife, we were sitting on the ruins of some old fortress or something, and we were sitting and talking, and all of a sudden I knew what the ending would be. And it's the ending that you have just heard. So, thank you so much for listening. I hope you managed to listen as if it was written for you, because it was.
It was written to have resonance and to be deep and to be like the showman's manifesto, be quite simple on the surface, yet dealing with possibly the biggest themes there is. So, yet again, I would like to ask you to, if you haven't already, subscribe to this here podcast. It would make me very happy to see that you have clicked that follow and subscribe button on your whatever your podcast feed is, and thus be notified with each exciting new installment of The Way of the Showman. Get it hot and fresh while it's there, like a freshly baked cinnamon bun into your phone. It would make me very happy, and apparently it's just the kind of thing that might allow the algorithm to find me a little bit more, to see that people are so excited that they actually have the episode come up on their phone. So, I hope you're gonna do me that favor until next time. So, speaking of until next time, that is all that I have to say for today. So, until next time, take care of yourself and those you love. And I hope to see you along the way. And also I hope that we're going to be following each other along for maybe another 100 episodes.